This podcast is a ministry of Emmaus, a Jesus church, with Pastor Dominic Doan. For more information, visit us at emmausrdu.com.
So have any of you been to the Sistine Chapel in Rome? Has anyone gone there? Okay, a couple hands. Yeah, okay, wow. Quite a few more than I thought. Number of years ago, I had a chance to go and visit, and it is truly breathtaking. I mean, the art, the architecture, the history, the beauty, just walking through there, I mean, there's just so much to gain and to learn. But of course, the thing that really struck me was the works of Michelangelo. Michelangelo painted in the 1500s. He was commissioned by the Vatican to paint these, and he had kind of a style about him where he would paint in clusters of three. And what he does here on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel is he takes us through the book of Genesis, the first few chapters in these clusters of three, and really illustrating and interpreting how he saw the text. Now, when you walk through it, the thing that really struck me was just how vivid and how colorful the pictures were. And if you've been there, you know what I'm talking about. It's almost like a Middle Ages version of the movie Avatar or something. It just kind of jumps off the ceiling. It's almost three-dimensional. And I saw people just standing there, sometimes for hours and hours, just taking notes and looking and observing and appreciating the beauty. But one of the things that's so fascinating about these works is that for hundreds of years, people weren't all that impressed with it. People would go to the Vatican, check out the Sistine Chapel, and sure, yeah, they appreciated it to a certain degree, but they really interpreted Michelangelo as more of a master of form and not so much as an incredible painter. And one of the reasons for that is because as the centuries wore on, the soot and the grime and the ashes and the pollution from Rome began to seep up, and the candles and the wax and all that began to seep up into the paintings, and layer upon layer it added this dirt so that the vividness and the richness of the beauty of these paintings was masked and tainted. And so for hundreds of years, people thought, no big deal. Well, in the 1900s, the Vatican began to discuss together, well, there has to be something more to these paintings than what we're presently seeing. So in 1979, they commissioned a couple guys to go and give them this huge task of cleaning the paintings. I can imagine 500 years of soot and dirt and pollution and ash stuck on these paintings. This was no easy task. And so they experimented with a couple different compounds. Long story short, in 1981, they came across this compound, built this scaffolding, and it worked. And so bit by bit, they began to remove centuries of dirt from these paintings. It took 9 years, twice as long as it took Michelangelo to paint it. So this work of cleansing took ages. And when it was all done, well, you have the finished product and you can go see it today, and it is absolutely beautiful. You know, one of the things I love about the Sistine Chapel, and personally, I just love history, but this particular place is that when you look at it, it's not just the story of a church or a painter or restoration, but I also see here a story of our own life. You see, the Bible says that when we were first created by God, the book of Genesis, we were made in his image, right? In his image, in his likeness, God sealed us. He poured out his spirit into us. That was his intention. But you read through scripture, you look at our lives too, and you find that the years and years of pollution from the world begins to taint and mar that image. And pretty soon, no longer are we the salt and light that we were called to be, because all these layers of dirt and compromise and sin has slowly built up. But then something happened. When you came to Jesus, Jesus began to work on you. It's what the Bible calls sanctification. Fancy sounding word, basically means the process by which you are being made into the image of Christ. So Jesus is in this process when you first gave your life to him, where bit by bit, and it's a slow, tedious process, he is cleansing you, he is washing you, he is making you more into his image, the Imago Dei, so that we can reflect him and be the people that he has called us to be. Every one of us, that's the world that we're living in right now. We're in this process of being made clean. I mean, that's why we're here. Right? We come to a place like this because after a long week, we want to be cleansed. After a long week, we've picked up a lot of dirt and pollution from the world, and we come here with hearts like, God, would you wash me? Would you cleanse me? Would you make me more like you? We want to be made clean. And if you can relate to that at all, you will love this story today. Because this story here in Luke is all about a man who wanted to be made clean, a man who struggled with disease, and he came to Jesus and, well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's dive in. Verse 12, check it out. It says this, while Jesus was in one of the towns, a man came along who was covered with leprosy. And when he saw Jesus, he fell with his face to the ground and he begged him, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Now, as we've seen over the last couple weeks, Jesus began his ministry up in the northern part of Israel, a place called Galilee. Everywhere that Jesus went, he was doing two things. Number one, he's preaching the good news of the kingdom of God. And number two, he's healing people. So people who are hurt and wounded and diseased and possessed, Jesus is pouring out into them. He's healing them, praying for them. And here we read, once again, this is happening. A man comes to Jesus. It says that he was covered with leprosy. We've pointed this out before. Luke, who wrote this, was not only an author and a pastor and a theologian and a thinker, but Luke was also a doctor. He's a physician. And because of that, throughout his gospel, he takes a great deal of attention and focus upon medical conditions. And so you'll find this, unlike any other gospel, or really, for that matter, most of the New Testament, except for Acts, whenever there's someone sick, Paul or Luke, he pauses, he stops, and he gives us deeper insight as to what was happening medically. Such is the case here. Now, it doesn't translate all that well for us, but you may want to circle that word covered. The word covered here was a medical term, meaning that this was a man who was at the last stages of this disease. This is a very, very serious condition. It wasn't like he just came to Jesus with some minor skin ailment or some slight problem. No, he comes to Jesus perhaps crawling on his hands and knees. It's a last-ditch effort. It's a last resort. He knows that unless he gets help soon, he is going to die. Now, it's hard for us, here we are 2,000 years later, removed from this situation, it's hard for us to understand the gravity of what it would have been like to be a leper in the ancient world. Man, of all the diseases that ravaged this time, none was more feared than leprosy. Leprosy was believed to be contagious. Many people interpreted leprosy as a curse from the gods. So if you had leprosy, there must have been something wrong that you did. There was no known cure at this time. If you're taking notes, Leviticus 13 actually gives us more insight into leprosy. It tells us how it began, that it was a very small white spot. And then in time, that spot would begin to grow, and it would form scabs and these nodules that would raise up from the skin. And not to gross you out, but those nodules would expand and grow and break open and pus and ooze, and the smell was absolutely atrocious. You could smell lepers for dozens and dozens of feet away. And in this process, as the disease advanced, you would slowly begin to lose feeling, especially in your extremities. So what would happen, if you've done some research on this, many of the lepers of the ancient world would lose their fingers, not so much because of the disease itself, but because their hands were numb. So if you have no feeling and you cut off a finger, you wouldn't even know it. It would be easy to injure it or wound it. Or in some places of poverty, there are cases where rats would actually chew on these lepers at night and they wouldn't even know what was going on. So this was a very, very severe disease. And because of its severity, the average lifespan of a leper, once he contracted the disease, was about 9 years. And essentially, you're the walking dead. Everywhere you go, people are staying as far away from you as possible. In fact, in the Talmud, the Jewish writings, it gives these laws. It says you are not to go within 6 feet of a leper. If it's a windy day, like it is today, you were not allowed to go within 150 feet of a leper because they believed that through wind you could catch their disease. They would be rejected by their families. They would be kicked out of the village, forced to live outside of cities. They were barred from temple worship. We think, well, what's the big deal of that? Well, it was huge in the ancient world because the temple was the focus of community life. So there's no prayers, there's no sacrifices, there's no opportunity for fellowship. You are cut off from all of that, and they would be forced to live in isolation, or many of them would form these leper colonies. And again, a big reason for this is because of the contagious nature, so they believed, of this disease. So no one else wants to catch it. They're staying away as far as possible. And if you got close to them, you would be considered to be ceremonially unclean as well, which meant that you couldn't come to the temple unless you did all these sacrifices and rituals and bathing and cleansing. For this reason, lepers had to identify themselves. Everywhere they went, they would either tear their clothes so you would know, okay, that guy, something's wrong, he's ripping his clothes, or they would shout, unclean, unclean, and you would know, okay, stay far away. In the Middle Ages, they would have to carry a bell and ring that bell as a warning to you. And this wasn't just a social thing, but it was also something in the religious community as well, where they didn't want anything to do with the lepers. In fact, check out these quotes from some rabbis of this time. One rabbi said, "When I see a leper, I throw stones at them, lest they come near to me." Another rabbi said, "I would not so much as eat an egg that was purchased on a street where a leper had walked." So this is a sentence to a life of fear and isolation. Can you imagine what this guy is going through? Could you imagine that everywhere you go, the grocery store, the mall, the game, picking up your kids from school, everywhere you go, unclean, unclean. Imagine seeing people run, parents grabbing their kids and getting away as fast as possible. You move into a community, everyone else moves out. That's the stigma that they're having to deal with. Have any of you guys seen that 1980 movie called The Elephant Man? Yeah, okay. Anthony Hopkins is in it. Man, it's a heavy movie, right? And it's based on a true story. A guy named Joseph Merrick, who had this really severely debilitating disease, not unlike leprosy, actually, that left him just majorly deformed, especially in his face. And so everywhere he went, he had this scarf that he wrapped around him so as not to get undue attention. And there's this one scene, maybe you remember it. He's at a railway station, and his scarf comes off accidentally, and everyone just freaks out. They'd never seen anything like that, and they're yelling and pointing and running. And there's this group of guys, there's like 20 of them or so. They chase him down into this bathroom area, and he's cowering in the corner, and they're pointing at him and jeering and mocking and laughing. And in this heartbreaking scene where he just bursts out and he says, "I am not an animal. I am a human being." And what's so haunting about that scene is not just the inhumanity of the people who are chasing him and pursuing him and mocking him and jeering and shouting, but it's a man who desperately wants his humanity back. It's that deep, pervasive sense of hopelessness and despair. That's what we see here. This man has been cast out from society. The world has turned its back on him. The church has turned its back on him. He's been ravaged by a disease. And as a last-ditch effort, he comes to Jesus, verse 13 or verse 12. He fell. He fell with his face to the ground. Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. How would Jesus respond to this? What would Jesus say? Well, check this out, verse 13. It says that Jesus reached down his hand and he grabbed a rock, threw it at the man and said, get away from me, unclean person. No. Jesus reached down his hand and did what? Touched the man. Underline that. Write that down. This is huge. Jesus touched the leper. I am willing, he said, be clean. And immediately, note the word immediately, we'll come back to that, the leprosy left him. Jesus did what no other religious leader had ever done before. He didn't reject him, curse him, mock him, throw stones at him. No, Jesus reached out his hand and touched the leper, risking leprosy himself. And by touching the leper, he would have been made ceremonially unclean in the eyes of the law. But can you imagine what this must have meant for the leper? The rabbi touched him. For years, this leper had not felt human touch. For years, ostracized, banned, the victim of discrimination, he didn't know what it was like to be hugged, to be embraced, to be touched, to be loved in a tactile way. For years, he lived without this. And again, it's hard for us to wrap our mind around how significant this was. Psychologists tell us that losing human touch is just as psychologically devastating as losing your sight or losing your hearing. In fact, there's been a ton of research on this in recent years. In fact, a year ago, last March, this magazine, Psychology Today, they had this whole study, this article that came out called The Power of Human Touch. And in there, they argue that human touch is actually a form of human communication. And through it, we can communicate up to 8 different emotions. Interesting. And they did this whole research on, in fact, they looked at NBA teams. And they found out that the NBA teams that were more tactile, that touched each other more, high fives, slap on the back, chest bump, NBA teams that did all that were far more successful than those teams that didn't really touch all that much. Maybe that explains what happened on Friday with Duke. Maybe there needed to be more high fives or something, I don't know. But they actually get into some of the medical reasons. They talk about how through a touch, it lowers your stress hormones, it releases oxytocin, and all these things happen in your body that produces healing. And this is interesting too. They also said that warmer climates tend to be much more touchy-feely than colder climates that are far more reserved. I've definitely seen this. As most of you know, I was a pastor in Hawaii for 8 years, suffering for Jesus, really tough, right? And you should have seen our welcome team. I mean, it was unreal just how friendly they were. People show up, aloha, right? And hugs and kisses. Like, you walk in and you just feel so loved. Last week, I was in England, and I spoke at a church, and let me just say, it wasn't that way. They didn't even have a welcome team. And then you go in, and it's just kind of this awkward, good to meet you, right? Keep your distance. Very, very interesting. So I'm praying as summer rolls around here, we will be the friendliest church around. So much of what it means to be human is conveyed by touch. Touch brings about systematic, holistic type healing in and through our body. It's fascinating how God created this. I used to be a missionary in Mexico for a year there. And I worked at this orphanage for severely handicapped children. And these were kids that were rejected by the system, rejected by family, some of the worst handicaps you've probably seen. And some heartbreaking stories. Some of these stories were kids who had been locked up, that for years and years had never been touched, no one giving them any kind of affection. And this orphanage has taken them in, and their whole thing is to heal and restore and love on these kids, and then hopefully adopt as well for families that are looking for this. And I remember first getting there, and it was just out of high school, actually, and learning, you know, what it meant to minister to these children. And I'll never forget this kind of training time that they had. And they talked specifically about touch. They said, you know, one of the best ways you can help bring healing in their lives, in their heart, and their soul, and emotions, is just through a touch. They encourage us, hey, if you're just sitting there, hold their hand, or touch their face, or touch them on the back. Just make them feel loved. And we would see that happen over the course of the year. There were some cases where some kids had all of these walls and barriers up because of all that they had gone through, but bit by bit, it would come down through touch. Jesus touched the leper. For years, he had never experienced this. I imagine the tears are flowing at this point because Jesus is doing what no one had done for him. And listen, Jesus didn't have to do it that way. He could have said, whoa, hold on, like that llama movie, right? No touchy, don't come near me, right? 6 feet rule. You know what? Go 150 feet. That's even better. I'll Hail Mary you, healing, right? Go catch it. Go get it. I mean, Jesus, there are times when he healed people from a distance. He doesn't do that here. He touches him. Why? As we talked about, it's because Jesus wants to heal this man on every level. Jesus recognizes it's not just a skin issue, but it's a heart issue. It's an emotional issue. It's a social issue. It's a mental issue. This man is struggling in deep, pervasive ways, and through touch, Jesus is starting the healing process. Listen, when we come to Jesus, Christianity is not about just skin-deep issues. I know lots of people look at Jesus that way. They look at Christianity that way. They think, you know what? Maybe I'll become a Christian. I'll go to church, pay my dues, maybe sing a few songs, listen to a sermon. It'll make me feel better about myself, right? It's kind of a fire insurance. I'll go to heaven instead of hell, right? And it's just kind of a surface level, skin deep thing. But that's not what it means to come to Jesus. What Jesus wants to do in your life is so much more substantive than that. He wants to redeem and transform the essence of who you are. He wants to sanctify every area of your life, mentally, emotionally, physically, psychologically, sexually. Every area of your life is being brought under the lordship of Jesus Christ. You are being transformed back into the Imago Dei, or in the words of Romans 8, you're being transformed into the image of his Son. Following Jesus is much more than surface level band-aid spirituality. Following Jesus is a radical renovation of the heart. It's the swallowing up of what has been distorted and tainted by sin and being introduced into the wholeness, the beauty, the shalom of the kingdom of God. That's what's happening to this man. Through a touch. This carpenter from Nazareth is beginning that healing process. Now, check out what happens. The story continues. Verse 14, Jesus ordered him, "Don't tell anyone, but go, show yourself to the priest, and offer the sacrifices that Moses commanded for your cleansing as a testimony to them." Now, this is where... This gets really interesting for me. When Jesus touched the man, was he healed in that moment? Yes or no? Yeah. When he said, "You are clean," he was clean, right? So why in verse 14 would he say, "Now go show yourself to the priest, go through this process," and it was a lengthy process? Why would Jesus tell him to do that? Why didn't he just say, "Okay, you're clean, you're healed, go back into your community, go track down your family, enjoy life"? Why didn't Jesus do that? Here's why. Again, it has to do with the level of healing that Jesus is wanting to bring in his life. Jesus knew that this man lived in isolation. Jesus knew that this man suffered from loneliness. He is wanting to reintroduce him back into community life. And the path forward for that in that culture, well, it was called the law of the leper. And again, if you like to take notes, go deeper in these things, jot it down, check it out later. The law of the leper comes from Leviticus 14. And basically, it's a long, difficult chapter to read, but it's fascinating too. Basically says, look, if you're being healed or cured from your leprosy, here's the process you need to go through. You go see the priest. The priest will physically examine you, make sure there's no leprosy. You offer sacrifices to the Lord. You have to bathe. You have to shave. You have to offer more sacrifices. On and on it goes. The whole process took a minimum of 8 days. And only after those 8 days would the priest then look at you and say, okay, officially, you are clean. You are an accepted part of the community. Listen, that's what Jesus wanted for this man. He didn't just say, you're clean, go your way, have fun, go back into town, because Jesus knew that wouldn't happen. They still looked at him as a leper. So he had to go through, listen, a process. He had to go through a process in order to be fully clean. This is what hit me. For 8 days, this man is living in a very odd tension. A tension between being clean, but also at the same time, being unclean, right? He knew he was clean. Jesus told him he was clean. He had every right to go back into the community. But in the eyes of everyone else, in reality, in that culture and society, he was still unclean. He's in this odd phase between cleanness and uncleanness. And brothers and sisters, that, I think, is a picture of sanctification, right? When you first came to Jesus, maybe it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 30 years ago, maybe last month. Jesus said to you, you are clean. You are washed. You are cleansed. You are sanctified. You are the righteousness of God in Christ Jesus. Old things have passed away. All things have become new. You're a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's chosen people. When you came to Jesus, he said, you are clean. That's one level of reality, the ultimate reality, God's perspective, the perspective that counts. Theologically, spiritually, we are clean. We are robed in his righteousness. But there is another reality. And what is that other reality? Well, like Paul talked about in Romans 7, we still struggle, right? He said, oh, wretched man that I am, who can deliver me from the body of this death? He says, I don't do the things I want to do. I do the things I know I shouldn't do. If you ever tried a diet, you know what Paul's talking about, right? We all wrestle with sin. We all wrestle with compromise. So where are we? Well, we are in this tension between being clean on one hand. You are clean, Jesus said, but also knowing that we're still unclean and we're in this process where bit by bit, Jesus is cleansing the canvas of our soul so that we can reflect the image of God back to the world. It's a long process, it's a slow process, it's a difficult process, but bit by bit, he who began a good work in you will be faithful to complete it. Alan Redpath, he had this amazing quote. He said this, the salvation of a soul is the miracle of a moment, but the manufacture of a saint is the work of a lifetime. That's where we're living. We're under construction. God's not through with us yet. There's still some issues that are being worked out. When I got back from the mission field, I was trying my best to get a job because I needed money. For those who have been on the mission field, you know, it's not the path to financial greatness. And so I come back, I need a car to get a job, to get money, and I barely was able to scrape together a couple $100 where I purchased the world's worst beater car. I mean, it was horrific. In fact, it was such a bad car that a friend of mine jokingly got a sign that said, this is not an abandoned vehicle, and stuck it on my car as a joke. Now, he thought it was a joke. I actually thanked him for it because there were times when tow trucks tried to pick this thing up. It was very helpful, trust me. Sometimes I wish that we had signs like that, right? I wish I had a sign hanging around my neck. This is an abandoned vehicle, right? God's not through with me. I know there's issues. I know there's problems. I know there's weaknesses and flaws, and we all relate to that. But God, through his Spirit, is in this process of changing you. And if that's our reality, if we live in the tension between unclean and clean, if we're in this tension of being cleansed in the canvas of our soul, then we have to be a community that shows grace. Man, my prayer for Emmaus this week, I've been praying this for us. Lord, may we be a community that's not backbiting or gossiping or critical or tearing each other apart, but may this be a community where your grace is on full display, that when we fall, we pick each other back up, that we're helping each other, we're joining together in this partnership, this thing called sanctification. That's what it means to pursue him in community. And that's what Jesus wants for this man. He wants to restore him at a community level, to introduce him back into society. So he says, all right, go see the priest, go through the 8 days of sacrifice, bathing, cleansing, shaving, all that, and then you can go see your family. Now, check out what happened, verse 15. Yet the news about him spread all the more, so that crowds of people came to hear him to be healed of their disease. You can understand why, right? A well-known leper is healed. People want to see that. They want to hear about that. But Jesus, verse 16, often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. A few weeks ago, we talked about the prayer life of Jesus. And you know, one of the things we unpacked together was that prayer is what enabled Jesus to do the things that he did, right? Where did Jesus find the strength to minister day after day? Through prayer. Where did Jesus find the love and compassion to touch a leper and heal him? Well, it came from his prayer life. Where did Jesus find the wisdom in his teaching? Again, it was an overflow of his prayer life. So we unpacked that a couple weeks ago, but what I want us to note here is that Jesus didn't just pray because he's trying to get more wisdom or more strength or more compassion or more love. No, Jesus prayed because he genuinely wanted to pray. He genuinely loved to be with his Father. It says here that he often withdrew to lonely places and he prayed. Prayer for Jesus was not a means to an end. You know, I often look at prayer that way, right? If I pray more, God will give me all this stuff. That's not prayer. Jesus saw prayer as an end to itself. Prayer was the default mode of Jesus' heart. It was the place that he naturally wanted to be. I stumbled across this great quote by Oswald Chambers. He said this, "Prayer does not prepare us for the greater work. Prayer is the greater work." And just let that sit for a while in your heart. Prayer is the greater work. This is where, for me, this story begins to come together. We're talking about sanctification, this process by which we're made holy, this movement from being unclean to clean. In any study on sanctification, especially in religious circles, it is really easy to say, okay, here's the key to sanctification, and we default to works or legalism, right? You want to be more holy? You want to be more like Jesus? Okay, pray more, study more, read more, do more, repent more, give more, eat more kale, go to church more, on and on and on, right? We have all these rules and regulations, and if you've grown up in churches, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And whether explicitly or implicitly, we're often given this perception through religion that sanctification is all about what you do. But what I see here in this story is something radically different that turns all that upside down. How did this man get cleansed? What did he do to be clean? Well, he must have been at church a ton. Nope. He couldn't go to church, right? He must have been worshiping with all his heart. Well, it doesn't say that. Besides, again, he's not allowed to be in the temple. Well, he must have been out giving lots of alms to the poor. Well, first of all, they wouldn't have wanted to be near him, and he didn't have any money anyway. Lepers were broke. What's he doing in order to receive such a blessing? I know, he's evangelizing. He's out living out the mission, right? Sharing door to door. No one wanted to be with him. They're running away. It was a weird kind of evangelism. I don't want to be like you. I'm taking off. So what is he doing then? How did he earn this? How did he become more holy? How did he become more clean? What did he do? Listen, the only thing that he did is come in brokenness, in his wounds, in his leprous, pussy, oozy condition, comes to Jesus, falls down on his face and says, if you're willing, you can make me clean. And Jesus says, you have a ton of work to do. You need to join this community group. You need to sign up for this seminary class. And then I'll make, no. He says, I am willing, be clean. Here's the game changer for me. The key to sanctification is not more rules or do's or don'ts or religion. The key to sanctification is Jesus. Be with Jesus. Love Jesus. Serve Jesus. Come away to the secret place, like it says here. Spend time in his presence. Let him begin to work in your heart. As Jesus said, just abide in me, and I will abide in you. It's as we're with Jesus that he begins that process of sanctification. And brothers and sisters, we need that sanctification. I don't know about you, but there are some leprosy issues in my life, right? We all struggle. We all have those areas where sin, it started small, but through small compromises, small decisions, and we didn't really think it was that big a deal at the time, but we continued to allow it to grow and expand, and then it just gets ugly and messy, and pretty soon we start to lose feeling. Our heart gets hard. It begins to distort and disfigure our minds, our soul, our imagination, our spiritual life, and like this man, we can relate how desperately we need to be made clean. And in this process, in our leprosy, we've tried different things to be clean. You've tried religion. You've tried the church. You've tried Lepers Anonymous. You tried reading more books, right? You tried the conferences. And the problem is, maybe that helps to a certain point, but it doesn't work because there's something deeper that's going on. It's not just a skin deep issue. It's not just a surface issue. It's something with your heart. It's something in your soul that is broken that needs to be fixed. You need, I need a change of identity. That's what Jesus offers. Religion doesn't offer that. Religion offers you skin deep, band-aid, quick fixes. But Jesus says, come to me. Let me radically restore and renew your heart and change you into my image. And I will change you the way you think, the way you view the world, the way you treat others, the way you talk. I'll set you free. You can be clean. And we come. We come with our wounds, our baggage, our guilt, our sin, our struggle. Day by day by day, we pour out our heart to him. We pursue him. We love him. We sit at his feet, and he begins to change us. Yes, sanctification is a process. We're living in the tension between unclean and clean. But brothers and sisters, more than that, sanctification is a person. It's Jesus. And today, he invites us to come and to be clean. Well, Pastor Dom, how do you know that's true? How do I know that Jesus offers me that? How do I know that he'll forgive me and wash me and set me free? Here's how I know. Because Jesus became unclean for you. He touched the leper. He took your leprosy, he took your sin, He took your pride. He took our tendency to gossip, our critical spirit, our addictions, our pornography, our anger, our bitterness, our unforgiveness. And the Bible said he took all that and nailed it to the cross. He became the leper for you. He was ostracized for you. He was taken outside of the city for you. He was the one mocked at. He was disfigured as they pinned him to that tree. And because of that love, he says to you and to me, come, I am willing, be clean. Let's stand together, shall we?